This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org.
Rising from the floods. Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland. The mighty Mississippi is expected to crest this weekend after more than a week of massive flooding. 23 levees have failed so far. 25 more are considered still at risk. Floodwaters have taken a toll on farmland around the Midwest, putting even more pressure on an already strained supply of grain. The Wall Street Journal reports a group of meat producers has asked the White House to roll back ethanol mandates because of the new damage to corn crops. The rising waters have also forced tens of thousands of people from their homes. Now the housing industry is looking ahead to the business of reconstruction. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports.
In terms of rebuilding, the situation may not be as bad as it appears. Wayne Wynn is president of the Cedar Rapids Home Builders Association. He says this is not another Katrina.
I don't think it's going to be anything drastic. I've been out in the field inspecting for the last 2 days, and I would say 85 to 90% of what we've already inspected will be repairable.
That means lots of work for local subcontractors. Workers from out of state have begun to show up, too.
If you're an electrician, an HVAC, plumber, your phone is going to ring off the wall.
Houses need to be inspected by the city before residents can move back, so there's an urgency for repairs. Wynn says over 100 volunteers from his Builders Association have been lending a hand in cleaning out flooded homes.
Work is one thing people aren't afraid of around here, and when we get in a desperate situation, people just work harder.
Wynn expects to find out next week how many houses will need to be rebuilt. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
It's been one day since federal prosecutors charged two former hedge fund managers at Bear Stearns with fraud. They're accused of telling investors things were hunky-dory in the subprime market when they knew it wasn't. The two have denied any wrongdoing. Today, the question on Wall Street is, could more arrests follow? Ashley Millen-Tite has that story.
Bear Stearns executives may not be the last to face criminal charges on subprime losses. Scott Myers heads the litigation group at Chicago law firm Levenfeld Perlstein.
There certainly are a number of other hedge funds that are in the mortgage-backed securities space. And there are a number of other mortgage originators and loan processors, many of whom have Wall Street connections. So I would not be surprised to see additional prosecutions on Wall Street related to this issue.
But securities lawyer Chris Bebel isn't so sure.
The old saying is, indict in haste, repent at leisure. These are very complex, detailed cases.
Bebel says it could be very tough to convince a jury the Bear Fund managers committed fraud. He says if the government does follow up soon with other indictments, it might regret it later. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
By the way, today's New York Times has some details of the Bear Stearns investigation. And guess what got those two hedge fund managers indicted? Emails. Guess they didn't get the Enron memo. A big drop in oil prices helped stocks to positive territory yesterday. The Dow rose 34 points, 0.3%, finished at 12,063. The Nasdaq tacked on 32 points, ending at 2462. And the S&P gained 5 points, closing out the day at 1342. This was shaping up to be a pretty good week for satellite radio outfits XM and Sirius. The head of the FCC blessed their proposed merger last weekend. But fortunes can change as quickly as channels. Shares of XM and Sirius took a dive yesterday after Goldman Sachs released a report predicting a bleak future for satellite radio. It said younger subscribers would gradually migrate to other technologies like MP3 players.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. And by Clarkson Potters, The Splendid Table's How to Eat Supper, the cookbook inspired by the radio program for people who love to eat, available now. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship, online at kauffman.org.
The summer solstice is this weekend, the longest day and shortest night of the year. Many astronomers complain every night feels short when it comes to stargazing because the night sky is filled with the yellow haze of light pollution. With energy costs up, all those city lights are getting expensive, too. Proponents of darkness, not to be confused with lords of darkness, are on Capitol Hill today to encourage lawmakers to see the light. Janet Babin reports from the Marketplace Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio.
I get along really well with my neighbors. We help each other out, collect each other's mail, water the plants. But there's one subject I just can't broach. They're outdoor lights. They shine into my house and it makes me crazy. Anthony Arrigo feels my pain.
It's a very uncomfortable situation.
At one point, Arrigo had a neighbor's light and a street light shine into his bedroom.
So I had the choice of opening the window and the curtains and getting fresh air or closing the window and the blinds and sleeping in a dark environment.
Arrigo's frustration led him to create StarryNightlights.com. The website sells downcast outdoor lights. Arrigo says sales have tripled in 3 years. Many dark sky advocates are amateur astronomers who want to see the stars, but they're also concerned about costs. Pete Strasser's with the International Dark Sky Association.
The figure that we've calculated is about $10 billion a year in wasted cost to essentially illuminate the undersides of airplanes.
Many cities now have ordinances to prevent light trespass, but they often exempt street lights, the principal cause of light pollution. It doesn't help that utility companies, whose mission is to sell kilowatt hours, own most of the street lights and lease them to local governments. But some utilities have to follow state conservation mandates, like Pacific Gas and Electric in California. PG&E's Lee Cooper says the company's installing a new generation of LED streetlights that are 36% more energy efficient, and
they're very directional, so you're only illuminating where you need light, so in this case, the street surface.
PG&E estimates that more efficient outdoor lights could save enough energy to power up 3.6 million homes. Cooper and the Dark Sky Association hope to convince lawmakers that we need a federal solution to this glaring problem. They'll make their case today on Capitol Hill. And I'll be eyeing my neighbors tonight. Maybe they heard this story and we can work out a peaceful solution. In Durham, North Carolina, I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
And in dark, skyless Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland. Enjoy your weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.